This is a recording of the open meeting of the Federal Election Commission held on May 7th, 2009. Should you have questions after listening to this recording, please call the FEC at 1-800-424-9530 or email us at info@fec.gov.
Good morning, everyone. This will convene the open meeting of the Federal Election Commission for Thursday, May 7th, 2009. I believe we have a motion for the correction and approval of minutes. Mr. Vice Chairman?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, I'd like to move approval of the minutes for the open meeting on Thursday, April 23rd, 2009, as set forth in agenda document number 09-22.
Thank you very much. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? None. The motion passes 6-0. The next item is Gallagher advisory opinion. And, Mr. Chairman, we have a late submitted document.
Yes, I'd like to move to suspend the rules on the timely submission of agenda documents in order to consider agenda document number 09-23.
Thank you very much. All in favor?
Aye.
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 Opposed? Again, that motion passes 6-0. So the Office of General Counsel, would you like to present the advisory opinion?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and good morning, Commissioners. Before you is agenda document number 0923, which is a response to a request for an advisory opinion from Representative Elton Gallagher and his principal campaign committee, Elton Gallagher for Congress. The request asks whether Representative Gallagher may use campaign funds to pay for upgrades to his home security system. The upgrades were recommended by the U.S. Capitol Police in response to repeated and uninvited incursions onto Representative Gallagher's residential property by an individual who had harassed the Congressman and Mrs. Gallagher concerning the Congressman's 2008 reelection campaign. Although the individual is currently incarcerated, the individual has previously violated a restraining order issued to Mrs. Gallagher, and Representative Gallagher is concerned that the individual may be released soon and will resume his harassment of the Congressman and Mrs. Gallagher. The draft concludes that the use of campaign funds to pay for upgrades to the security system would not be a conversion to personal use, because the need for the upgrades would not exist irrespective of Representative Gallagher's campaign or duties as a U.S. congressman, and therefore is permissible. The commission received one comment on the request, and I would be happy to address any questions that you may have.
Thank you, counsel. Any comments? I'm going to, I know the vote is five in favor, but I'm not going to support it at this time. I regret it a little bit. I do have some concern about moving this into this particular area without perhaps some further input. I feel that making improvements to the home of a candidate or a potential candidate is an area that we've been somewhat shy of, partially because of the perception of abuse, and I think I'd like to if we were to move in this direction, do it in a regulatory way where we can take a look at what the standard would be for when we would do this and what the limits would be, how long the time would be for providing this kind of expenditure. And I think we are going down a path that would require us to do this. So I recognize that does not enjoy the support of the majority of the commission, so I'll call for a vote at this point. So may I hear a motion? Yes.
I just wanted to comment. I appreciate your concerns, and I also have always been very concerned about our not authorizing personal uses of campaign funds. I'm not concerned in this instance. I mean, he's not putting in a swimming pool or a hot tub and asking for campaign funds for that. I think we'd have an easy time saying no to that kind of request, but this does seem to present a serious security concern, and in the same way that taxpayer dollars go towards providing Capitol Police and other security concerns for members of Congress. Obviously he couldn't use official funds to upgrade his security system at his home, but I'm not concerned about this as a personal use. I think that this sounds like a legitimate threat, and if I had a creepy guy like that hanging around my house, I'd want to do something about it too.
Well, again, this cries for some kind of approach of the kind the commission is taking, and I recognize that. I know that we have regulations that say that we can't use any funds for mortgage payments on a home, or even use a home for to rent a portion of the home for campaign purposes that clearly are being used for you know, the office holder at the time. And so because we have those kind of special things in place to not permit expenditures of potential permanent nature in someone's home, it concerns me to do this without, you know, more deliberation on what the limits might be. But this is a case that definitely is of concern. On the irrespective issue, I would point out that you know, the Canada already has a security. It's not like security systems are irrespective. They're a commonplace thing, and so the enhancement maybe should be this is not an unreasonable decision on the part of the other members of the commission. I recognize that. It just concerns me to move in that direction without further consideration as to where this might take us. And I know that, you know, we may be looking at huge fences. You know, we've seen examples in the past where we're talking now bodyguards. Are we talking about times of personal expenses for things like this? And I think we ought to give some consideration of that before we go much farther. But this is certainly not an unreasonable position to take for the commission. Commissioner McGann.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I hear your concerns, and to the extent that you feel rulemaking in this area is in order, I would certainly support such efforts, because I do think that that provides a better context to weigh a variety of factors and hear comment from the public in a way that the AO process does not permit. But on the other hand, I've heard many times before I joined the agency and since I've been at the agency that, well, someone could have gotten an AO before they did something, and if you just get an AO, then you know you're safe. And I use the word safe on purpose, because that's really a twofer here, right? You're safe on the law, but you're also safe in your home. The problem with the rulemaking approach in this context is the timing. It takes a lot longer than an AO. This requester needs advice now as to whether they can do it. I think the case he presents for the needs for this is very strong. And I also would like to note that AOs are not new law, right? They're interpreting current law. It's not a new rule. It's an interpretation of the current rule. And in the event, in a rulemaking context, there becomes a need to limit the reach of this AO, we can do that. In fact, new rules can overrule advisory opinions. So I'm not concerned at this time, but I share your concern that this could perhaps lead to other things, and Commissioner Weintraub's observation that he's not buying a pool or a hot tub is really a good contrast, right? Because if you did that, that would be personal use, and there'd also be probably political consequence there. And this requester could face some political downside. I mean, the reality is he is using campaign funds in a way that political opponents could question, notwithstanding the advisory opinion. Really, because it's legal doesn't make it right in the world of politics. So there is a sort of the market approach on correcting such things, but in the event that this does end up with a slippery slope or something, and Mr. Chairman, if you want to do rulemaking and talk about it more in that context, I would certainly support that. But I can support this draft as is, because I think this requester needs an answer now, and then the commission, if we want to think about it some more, we can do that on our time, not their time.
Thank you. I definitely appreciate those comments. I understand that. Mr. Vice Chairman, did you have some comments as well?
I agree with the comments that Commissioner McGann and Commissioner Weintraub have set forth about this particular draft, and I too plan on supporting it. I do believe that that the requester in this case puts forth a very compelling case, and these upgrades. One element that I think is persuasive to me is that the upgrades that he plans on installing were recommended by the U.S. Capitol Police. The congressman was consulting with the Office of the U.S. Capitol Police to see what additional upgrades may be necessary to deal with a situation that is rather troubling. And I certainly appreciate the concerns that the chairman has about personal use and how we have to be very careful about how far we extend how we interpret that provision to make sure that campaign funds aren't being used for strictly personal uses. But I think in this case that the facts are sufficient that that I think that we can approve this AO without doing violence to our the law or to the regs. And but if we do need to engage in further rulemaking in order to clarify this further, I wouldn't be opposed to that. But I'm happy to support this draft as is.
Thank you. And I do recognize that our rulemaking process isn't the most speedy in the world. And yes, and the need for immediate relief. I appreciate that. I consider my comments as kind of a marker on caution to take, and so they should be considered in that vein. Any further comments? Do we have a motion?
Mr. Chairman, I would like to move approval of draft AO 2009-08 as set forth in agenda document number 09-23.
Thank you. All in favor?
Aye.
And I oppose. All in favor, Madam Secretary, except for my vote in opposition. The next matter is discussion of a press release policy for the implementation of a weekly digest. The matter before the commission is to consider an approach toward providing a weekly digest that would be available at the beginning of each week to advise the public of all actions of that the commission has taken or events that have occurred of relevance to that are public in nature, of relevance to the commission and to the public, and to provide instant access by a click of the button to the background data or all available information that's then public so that people can immediately click onto it and see that. It's viewed kind of as a one-stop shop whereby someone can quickly find out the most recent history of agency actions and then click back on other weeks as well. For example, if we keep a number of weeks, 10 or 20 or more quickly available for click, people can and go back and see where we've been, where we're going, where we're not going, where we should be going, and make some judgments about our progress or lack thereof in their opinion in certain areas. The idea is really to facilitate more disclosure of how we're getting our work done. And hopefully this would be a methodology that we could use in the future to also show upcoming events or upcoming acts or consideration on the part of the commission. So it's an easy educational process. I know when I click on the website, I know most of this is available, but it takes some work to get there. This is not to substitute press releases in cases where we think they're deserving, and certain press releases, as indicated in the templates that are on file here, for consideration, show that those you could click to press releases that are of relevance too. The concept would also be that, in addition to clicking on to our website, any person who would want to get these sent to them by push email could automatically receive those whenever we issue those. The template really was developed in our office by Brad Deutsch, who looked at some other agencies to see what they were doing along that line. And I realized that there were some other agencies that had this, and it seemed to be a very helpful process for those agencies. I would refer to the SEC and the FCC as being ones that we looked at, but there are others as well. And Stacy Shin in our office on her own prepared the first template that you see, which I thought was quite helpful. I wanted to thank the press committee. That one went to the press committee, and then recently the press committee was approved the concept, and the press office prepared that. So the two templates that are there are ones that show the original consideration and the ones that are most recently issued with facts and how it might look if we were to implement that policy. And I did want to thank the people on the press committee, which is Commissioner McGann, Commissioner Weintraub, and Commissioner Bowerly, for their initial approval of it, and also for Art Forster and Judy Ingram and others in the press office who have worked this up. So with that, Mr. Forster, you have comments on this?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Good morning, Commissioners.
Good morning.
I would like to say that this is definitely a collaborative effort that touches all parts of the agency. It'll be a challenge, no doubt, for the press office to get this document out every week on time, but it's something that we can certainly take care of. But we'll be reaching out to OGC, CFO, staff directors, as well as commissioners, to make sure that it's complete and accurate. I would have one cautionary note, and that is it's going to require a speedy coordination process Sometimes, as you know, in getting a news release coordinated takes longer than we would like. So hopefully we can develop a streamlined process. Since all of this information is already available, I don't see, you know, a real challenge in getting everybody to agree to what's in the digest itself. But we welcome the opportunity and agree that this will be a good snapshot of commission activity for the last week and the weeks ahead.
Thank you very much. And yes, you just have no hesitancy to crack that whip. We'll do the best we can to comply. any further comments, Mr. Vice Chairman?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I support the concept of the weekly digest. I do agree that this will provide a very useful weekly snapshot for the regulated community and also those who are just members of the community who are interested in the work of the commission and may want to know better what we're doing and understand what work we have completed and what work we're about ready to undertake. When I was both in private practice and then later on the Hill, having oversight over the commission, sometimes it was a little bit other than the visible things that you see in open meetings or with respect to advisory opinions and regulations, sometimes it was a little bit of a mystery what else the commission was doing. And I think that the templates that have been developed, I think, will be very useful tools for those who are interested in the work of the commission to better understand what it is we're doing. And so I think this will increase transparency. I think will increase understanding about the agency. And I see this not as supplanting, but rather supplementing our normal press releases. So I would be happy to move that we direct the press office to begin creating the weekly digest and that they use the templates provided in agenda document number 09-24 and begin making those available via the FEC website and by email.
Thank you, Mr. Vice Chairman. I apologize. I forgot to ask you to point out that we have a late submitted document.
I'll be happy to do that. I'd move to suspend the rules on the timely submission of agenda documents in order to consider agenda document number 09-24.
Thank you. All those in favor? Opposed? None. The motion passes 6-0. Any further comment of any kind? Commissioner McGann.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I, too, support this. I think it's long overdue. And I have some strong thoughts about how the agency should present itself to the public. Having dealt with the agency for years before I joined the agency, I had some frustration with how certain cases were handled by the agency when they were announced and how there was at times an overemphasis on certain aspects of the agency and a lack of communication about what the rest of the agency does. When I came in as chair, I tried to make a point of announcing at open meetings what the commission would be doing. Recall I announced that the bundling rule would be done by the end of the year, and it was. And I think it's important for the public to know what's coming up. Our open meetings so far this year have been rather short because, well, there's just not a lot of advisory opinions this time of year. But as the year goes on, I think they'll get longer, and I think we need to continue to make a point of informing the public as to what we're doing and when we're doing it. I think the digest is excellent for another reason. It allows the public to see what the agency is doing in court. The reality is, since the middle of about 2007, there have been a number of court cases, from the Supreme Court down to various circuit courts to district courts, either interpreting our law or state laws based upon our law. There are a number of cases currently in the courts challenging all sorts of provisions of the law. I think it's very important for the public to realize that and see where those cases are and what the issues are in court. Because that really does relate to what the agency does every day in the enforcement context or the rulemaking context or the advisory opinion context. And there really has not been an easy way for the public to see that. And I remember over the years trying to find briefs and trying to figure out where things were in court cases, and it really took me a long time. And I think this digest will expedite the ability of those who care to look for that sort of thing to find that sort of thing. It also allows for people to not necessarily check the website every day or see for random press releases or that kind of thing. It gives you a one-stop shop, and I agree with Mr. Forrester that it's going to be not easy to get this out on time. I'm committed to doing that. But I think it's better to have information out sooner rather than later and not necessarily mess around with characterizations of what happened in cases and that sort of thing. And there's, you know, there's two schools of thought on this, and I certainly concede that there is, and I'm in the school of thought where sometimes less is more because you can actually convey more information in a shorter period of time. That's not to say that there are times where the agency needs to bring to the public's attention significant cases or developments in the law. But it's not just if there's a big fine. I emphasize developments in the law sometimes are more important because agency takes attack in a certain enforcement manner. I think the public ought to know about that and be able to understand what the agency's doing. But ultimately, I support this. It also it anticipates a next week section so that people can see what's coming up. And the reality is, look, there's going to be times where this is going to be long. There's going to be times where this sort of document is going to be short. That's the nature of an agency. The work here ebbs and flows, and it's just the nature of the beast. Complaints come in the fall. Respondents have time to respond. The response comes in. The counsel's office has to make their recommendation, and the commission considers complaints. They go through the process. So there's not necessarily, in the eyes of the public, a steady flow of commission activity. But the reality is that there tends to be a steady flow of commission activity, particularly in litigation. I was really struck when I joined the commission how many cases were pending. It's not just the sort of cases I would concern myself with. Meaning the big cases, Wisconsin Right to Life, FEC versus Davis, but just a number of smaller suits where, you know, the FEC is named as a party simply because it's a suit naming every agency, or, you know, sometimes these suits they sue the Federal Election Commission thinking that we somehow had something to do with ballot access. You know, you get these suits all the time. And I think it's important for the public to see the work that everyone here does at the agency. So for that reason, I support this, and I really want to thank the chairman for his leadership on this, and pushing this through. I'm reminded of former Chairman Mason's comments in our hearing in January, where his comment was "just do it," coining the Nike phrase. And I applaud the chairman for moving this out at this time, because I, for one, am certainly in favor of more public communication by the commission, not less. And I think this goes a long way to that. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Mr. Weintraub.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I also support it. I think anything that we can do that will provide more transparency about what's going on over here is a good thing. I appreciate that the chairman said this would not supplant press releases. I note that looking at the two agencies that the chairman used as a model, the Securities and Exchange Commission and the Federal Communications Commission, and if you look at the week of April 19th to 25th, which was the sample week that was used in the template, the SEC, in addition to its weekly digest, issued 11 press releases that week, and the FCC issued 8 press releases that week. And the SEC's press releases were long and explanatory and talked a lot about, I think that they do particularly good press releases that provide a lot of detail about the issues that they are pursuing. I think it's great to provide links so that people can easily find the source material, but if you're a reporter on a deadline, getting a link to a 20-page document with 87 footnotes, I'm not sure is all that easy to digest if you want to write about it the next day. And, of course, reporters do write on a daily basis. They don't write on a weekly basis. They write on a daily basis. They want to know what we're doing, when we're doing it, and what it all means. So I support doing this, and I also support timely and informative press releases to provide some context for what the agency is doing.
Thank you for the comment. Hearing none, we have a motion before us. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Motion passes 6-0. Mr. Staff Director, do we have any management administrative matters to discuss?
I'm sure we do not.
Okay. Hearing none, the meeting.
Mr. Chairman.
I apologize. Did I miss something?
Yes.
Oh,
no, you
excuse me, Commissioner Weintraub.
You did not miss anything on the agenda, Mr. Chairman, but I just did want to make a comment about some items that were sunshined but did not appear on the agenda. We have four audit reports that have been hanging out there for quite a long time now, and they've been objected to back in February and March. One of them was originally circulated in November, and we asked for more information from audit. It was recirculated in February. And week after week after week, people are asking for these matters to be held over and not voted on. And one of them, at least, is beginning to present statute of limitations issues. So I just want to express my concern about this and to say that next week I'm going to ask for a vote on these audits. And I'm not going to consent to holding it over. And if people don't want to vote for it, they don't have to vote for it. But I think we really need to move these things along. And I'm reminded by Commissioner McGann's comment on former Commissioner Mason's Just Do It that one of the suggestions that was raised in that hearing that we held in January was that perhaps we ought to have hearings on audit reports in the way that we hold hearings for pre-probable, before you vote for pre-probable cause. And a while back I had sent around an email to my colleagues and said, you know, I think this is probably something that we all want to do, so why don't we just direct the staff to start drafting up procedures so we can do it, because it sounds like maybe this would be helpful. I mean, if people are having difficulties coming to a conclusion on these matters, maybe these hearings would be helpful. And obviously we're not going to be able to get that kind of a process in place for these four matters that are pending now, these four audit reports that are pending now, but I would encourage my colleagues again, because the staff won't do it until they hear from us that we want it done, that I think there's agreement that I've heard people individually express this, that we want to have these kind of hearings available, and I would encourage people to weigh in on this so that the staff will know that this is something they should direct their attention to. And in a similar light, I'll also raise the advisory opinion process, setting up some kind of a process for having some kind of back and forth with requesters for advisory opinions. I don't know whether it would have made a difference on today's advisory opinion, but I do think that there are some where it would be very helpful. And again, I think there's general agreement that this would be a good thing, but the staff is waiting for us to tell them that we really want to do it. So I would encourage people to weigh in on that so that we can follow up on Commissioner Mason's request that we just do it and just do some of the things that have been recommended to us.
Thank you very much. Commissioner Wong, again.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. First, with the audits, one of those audits we've already discussed in open session, and it's gone back and it's coming back around. And in fact, the audit was ready for commission consideration apparently in 2007, long before I joined the commission, but it's been lingering since then. So yes, there are statute of limitation problems. That one, I think, is already come and gone. But I have no problem voting on audits next week. I think we should. But the reality is this: we can bring things to the table and vote them, and then, well, I can just say no, or I can spend some time with the audit staff and get to understand what actually happened in audits and actually work through issues before we bring them to the table. When I joined the commission, we didn't really have time for a lot of that, and we moved quite a bit of product in a very short period of time. We came to the commission, we had 200 so matters on the docket, and we were basically through those, and everything got a vote at some point last year, and we're back in real time now. But the reality is we moved a lot of product, and when you do that, you don't really have time to spend a lot of time with the staff to get answers. You kind of keep it moving. Now that we have some time, I'm trying to use that time effectively to really understand cases. I don't want to make it sound like I didn't understand cases when I was voting on them, but when you have a little bit of time, you can you have more time to find common ground. And when you don't have the time, you tend to stick with your initial impression, and that results in certainly a quick decision, but maybe not necessarily the best decision. And now that we have some time, I think we're going to start making better decisions, or want decisions that I think will get to the heart of the matter. With respect to various changes that were recommended at the hearing, I support having the ability for those audited to have some sort of opportunity to be heard. Title 26 audits, when it comes to repayment issues, they already have that. Title 2 audits, as a practical matter, you really don't. You deal with the auditors, and folks write letters to the auditors, and I don't think it was particularly clear to the outside that the commission actually had access to and reviewed those that correspondence. I think we have made that clear now, that it's in the letter that goes to auditors, that hey, this letter can go to, this is actually to the commission. But I certainly think we need to have a hearing. In fact, my office has already drafted a proposal, which I have not circulated, but I can do so by the end of the week. It sounds like we have support for that. And the idea is not to slow the process down, but really to speed it up. I think it would narrow issues. I think it would allow the commission to be more informed than it'd be prior to it votes on an audit. And ultimately, I think it lets the public know that they're getting more of a fair shake. Thing about audits is they're conducted really under the dome of silence, and how it currently works is if you're audited, the auditors present their report to the commission, and unless a commissioner has an objection, they tend to go through without a lot of fanfare. And even when there is an objection, we talk about it in open meeting. But what's odd is it's the commission talking to their own auditors, and we get into it sometimes. And I've seen it before I came to the agency. It happened. It's happened since I've been at the agency. I've been a part of it where the commissioner's questioning auditors about the audit. And the person being audited sitting in the front row, and they're sort of, you know, making faces or, you know, doing this kind of eye roll and the hand gestures and all that kind of stuff. And it's very awkward. And it seems to me that they should have a much more prominent role when the audits are being considered by the commission. The other issue the Commissioner Weintraub raised on AOs, I think that's also a good idea. I don't have anything drafted on that, so to the extent someone can draft that, that would save me time. But I think there are AOs where folks should be heard, because it really surprised me as a commissioner how much of a bubble you can feel yourself being surrounded by. You read a lot of paper, a lot of things move by you, and sometimes a thoughtful brief by counsel, whether it's our counsel or a respondent's counsel, or just a supplemental memo by the auditors explaining what they're doing, goes a long way. And I think allowing people in the AO context to speak up once in a while, and I would even go so far as to say occasionally commenters, depending on the issue. But I'm not wedded to that. I think you can argue both sides of that, because you don't want to bog it down. And we did have a lot of positive feedback on our AO process in our hearing in January. One commenter who tends to be quite vocal in his opposition to things the agency does actually said, don't change anything about the AO process. He was very, very complimentary about that. And I think that is something that's working. I think we can probably speed them up a little bit. But that's something that's really been at the agency for years and years and years and years. And again, it's a balance. You want to get it faster, you want to get it right. I think that's something that I can certainly support. Another issue that comes up, and since we're in an open meeting, maybe we see where everyone is on this, is when you're audited or the reports analysis division finds a problem with your reports, they refer the matter to the Office of General Counsel. And what the agency has done historically is voted on the merits of that referral, the reason to believe stage, as we call it, and then that goes to the respondent, and they receive a letter that says, the commission has already voted reason to believe that you violated the act. It seems to me that it would not slow down the process, and in fact, it would probably speed up the process, because it would narrow issues before the commission if those folks had an opportunity to be heard. There's been some discussion among the commissioners, and I wouldn't share that publicly, because I think that's, you know, informal chit-chat in the hallway can be misconstrued in so many ways. But my sense is that there is some sentiment across the commission that's probably a good idea. I have that drafted as well, and I can circulate that by the end of the week if we want to take a look at that. And I think, and again, I want to thank the chairman for his leadership on the issue today, because I think it's a first step in what I hope could be several steps to address some concerns raised by those on the outside across the political spectrum. Given that, my sense is that there may be enough support for some of these. If someone wants to see my documents, happy to circulate them, and maybe we can, Mr. Chairman, move these somehow. What I'm not sure is, do I put them on a ballot and we vote them, or do we put them on an agenda for an open meeting? We probably have to discuss that with our council as to how we do these sorts of things. But, you know, sooner rather than later, there's people out there, you know, in the system who need to know this sort of thing. And I think having hearings actually helps those who are not necessarily involved in the case, whether it's those in the press or academics who follow the agency, those who file comments on behalf of different issue groups or public interest groups. I think it's important for all those groups to hear the sorts of arguments being made in various cases, because it tends to be enlightening. I found this as a lawyer. Sometimes arguments that you concoct in your head sound utterly brilliant until you have to say them out loud. And once they sort of leave your mouth and travel across the room, you realize sometimes they're quite silly. And other times they actually aren't, and they work, and you hear this. We had an oral argument Monday in the Emily's List case over one of our regs, and that was a very, very interesting argument, because it was, you know, it's a different perspective. When you go into federal court, you hear arguments advanced by both sides that aren't really the sort of arguments you hear in MERS, right? MERS, you're fighting over what the penalty is and little nuanced facts. You go to court, it's really much more the big picture. So I would really support any sort of ideas anyone has with hearings. I don't think they slow down the process. The few we've had on probable cause so far, I think, have been very helpful. I think they've actually allowed some of us to reach our decision much quicker than we would have otherwise reached it. So any other ideas, I'm all ears, and probably you can count on my support. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Yeah, thank you very much. I'd like to make a comment a little bit on that. First of all, I wanted to give credit to the former Vice Chairman, Mr. McGann, who initiated that hearing process last fall, and it was supported by everyone here, and I think everyone thought it was long overdue. Although I presided over it, it started initially under his leadership, and what we had was a 1.5-day hearing that really encompassed a whole panoply of issues that have received complaints over the years from the public and practitioners, and those have been synthesized, and the transcript is before the transcript of the hearing is public. We've since received an analysis from the staff director's office as well as from the Office of General Counsel. Our office has synthesized those again and made them available and distributed them to the members of the commission for consideration. It was my thought that we'd have a meeting, a public meeting, consisting of 1 or 2 days and go through a whole number of these as opposed to just picking one or two. But I think every one of those that are mentioned so far is certainly on the forefront and I think enjoy a majority of the commissioners' support. So procedurally, I think we're positioned now to do this, and I think the public will see that we're inclined to make a number of really, I think, helpful changes that will improve the due process as well as the efficiency of the process and enforcement, advisory opinions, and in other areas as well. Commissioner Weintraub.
Just one more brief comment, Mr. Chairman, because Commissioner McGann mentioned the pace of how quickly we could get out our advisory opinions, and I believe that both this week and with the Gallagher AO and last week with the Risch AO, the Commission came to consensus fairly quickly on it, and the staff moved quickly to get a draft to us, and we were well in advance of the 60-day deadline that we're allowed under the law. We don't have to take the full 60 days just because we're allowed 60 days. So I want to compliment the staff, and I appreciate their quick work on that so that we're able to get people answers quicker when we can.
Thank you. Commissioner McGann.
Thank you. I echo that. I before joining the commission, had assumed that the AOs took a long time because the staff took their time. The staff does take their time, but they try to get it right, and that, I think, is important. And I realized when I joined the commission that if the commissioners decide to move AOs quicker, they move quicker. It really is just that simple. And, in fact, last year, people like statistics. I don't. I think they really mask what really goes on, percentages and, you know, how often this happens, because it tends to be apples and orange comparisons. But this is really, I think, an interesting thing. If you look at the average time it took to turn around AOs, we actually cut the time by about 9 or 10 days, and that is really
as much credit to the Office of General Counsel as anything else, because they were willing to humor me by trying to move some AOs along. And the reality is, when the commission sort of reopened its doors, the election cycle was already well along, and there were already some AOs in the hopper. But as far as really when the clock started running for the new commission, we actually moved AOs very quickly. I think this AO today moved through rather expeditiously, as did the one last week. It's really up to the commissioners how fast these things move. If commissioners want to do it, they can do it. If they don't, they don't. If there is praise or blame to go around, ultimately it rests with commissioners. That's something that people could maybe keep in mind. One other thing I want to add, Mr. Chairman, is I know we're already moving underway on some other fronts. And another thing that pained me before I came to the commission, still pains me, is that our MERS online only go back so far. And the older MERS are still on microfiche. They're available to the public. I used to, as a young associate doing election law, that was a big day for me. I got to go and bill 8 hours sitting in the public records room going through microfiche. It's not bad. You know, and what's interesting about the microfiche is you discover a lot of MERS you otherwise wouldn't see, because you have to scroll through about 50 of them to find the one you're looking for. And you learn a lot because, well, you have to kind of read, you know, all these pages of microfiche. But that's not really the sort of thing that in the modern age we should be doing. I think we need to get more MERS online. There was a news article, former chair of the agency, former Chairman Potter, actually had a statement. We need to explain ourselves on some things. And I think what he was talking about in the article was the redactions on some MERS. And just so the public understands why that happens, the agency had been taken to court a couple times not long ago. And to me, that's within the past 10 years, regarding the release of information. And the court said, wait, you know, the confidentiality provisions still apply even if the MERS close. So there's an elaborate process that goes on with MERS when they close. And there's quite a bit of redaction that now happens per a case the AFL-CIO brought. So for those who are sitting out there scratching their head as to why things are redacted or why there's blanks, it's because the courts have told us we have to do that. So for those who want an explanation, there's your explanation. And notwithstanding that, there's still a lot, though, that can be put on the website regarding old MERS and the like, and I think there's efforts underway to do that. It takes some time to prepare the materials and that sort of thing, but my understanding is, Mr. Chairman, that's another one of your ideas and one that I support.
So, thanks very much. Just an update on that since you brought it up. We have been looking at a way to take those MERS and put them on and digitize them and put them on the line with the rest of those. At this point, we have online MERS from 1999 to the present, but the 24 years prior to that are now subject to a microfilm and scrolling for hours to find out a MER if you know where to look and know if it's even there. The difficulty of that, it's all been public for all these years, but you have to come down physically and take a look. So if somebody who's a poor lawyer in Reno, Nevada, I keep using that because it's a distance, you would have to fly to Washington, D.C. and wander into the first floor of the FEC building after being searched and then spend a lot of time trying to find an AO and not really know where the heck to find it. And then when you have it, you'd have to get a copy of it and somewhere pay you some money and then fly back to Reno. Or you could hire a couple of lawyers like Don McGannon, who's practicing, pay him a lot of money, and have them do it. So I think it would be great if everybody could be able to have equal access to the last 24 years of the MERS, starting from day one to 1999. From what we understand, it's about 700,000 pages, consisting of 140 rolls of microfilm. And within the next day or two, there'll be a request for information made public to examine what it would take in order to get that done, to transfer the microfilm to digitization and put it along with the rest of our MERS, which are already online from 1999 to the present. So we'll see what happens after that is made public. Commissioner Hunter?
I applaud your efforts in that regard, Mr. Chairman. And one comment on something that Commissioner McGann said is, while it is true that a lot of the information is redacted from the MERS due to the AFL-CIO case and because of the confidentiality provisions of the statute, I think there are some things that are redacted that are not because of those two things. and it's maybe because of the council deems that information to be privileged. And I understand that that's important and we should maintain that, but at the same time, I for one hope that we can look at those kinds of information that is not redacted because of the court case or the statute, and make as much of that public as we possibly can. And I think most of my colleagues support that recommendation. Another point on the audit cases that have been held over, I've been holding one over in particular, and that's the Cool matter. And I don't want to get into details because I think Commissioner McGann is recused from that matter. But I'm told from the audit staff that the legal issues. Why is that funny?
Okay.
I won't get into the detail. So I'm told from the audit staff that the legal issues in that case are virtually identical to the legal issues in another audit matter that was circulated last fall. A couple of us objected to that audit matter, and then it was pulled. And to be honest with you, it sort of mysteriously disappeared. So I keep asking, where is that other case? Because since they have the same legal issues, I thought it prudent to deal with them at the same time. Well, it just so happens that it was recirculated to us yesterday. So I have not looked at it since it was sent yesterday, but now we will have the benefit of knowing whatever the conversations were between audit and OGC, again, I believe on the same legal issue. So that's the reason that I've been holding that one up, and now that it's been circulated as of yesterday, we should be able to handle it pretty quickly.
Thank you very much. Any further comment? This has been a healthy discussion. I'm glad you've had it. And this is all part of transparency. So hearing no further objection, no further comment, the meeting's adjourned.